75% of our annual budget on grain farmer development. And the whole principle is that you teach somebody to catch the fish, not giving the person the fish. That led us into other terrain in terms of what needs to be done. The ideal is that our farmers that gone, that are going through training and are supported by state-of-the-art committed mentors, part of our my staff, that there should be enough supporting financially and otherwise from government to assist these farmers. But we know that the infrastructure available for that, although we see the commitment, is not up to standard. So what do we do now? Instead of just sitting back and wait for things to happen, we are willing to commit ourselves to unlock and assist government structures to make this work. Because for us, it's too important that our new commercial farmers become successful commercial farmers, that we can afford the luxury of not contributing to their ability to use what comes their way. Now, the interest of what we have today comes from a history where we apply for a number of flowers. Farmers. We started off with 136 farmers that were already farming commercially that couldn't make it this season because of the bad terms of trade within the grain industry. It costs you more to produce maize than what you get in the market. For these guys, they couldn't qualify for normal loans, so they were dependent on state assistance. We started off with a proposal. For each and every one of these farmers, we put together a profile, business plan. We have excellent knowledge about this specific individual. And this was now presented to various departments in government trying to get assistance. And by doing so, we then discover shortfalls in those structures of delivery. The easiest way out for us will be just to sit back and criticize. We didn't do that. We engaged with Department of Agriculture, Department of Land Affairs, and we're on the brink of making a breakthrough where we will, and we can elaborate on that one. But the thing is that for these 156 farmers, covering about 20,000 hectares, an amount of money of 27 million was needed to start their activities. And we're in a process of unlocking that money. Unfortunately, too late for the season that we're currently in, hopefully being able to allow them to prepare for the wheat season, the wheat planting season incoming, if they can plant wheat, but subsequently for the next summer season. But very importantly, Mr. Chairman, if you listen to us today, listen to our passion, see our commitment, and try to understand that we have to fast-track delivery in terms of ability. Because, unfortunately, as you know, agriculture doesn't wait for government machinery or government structures to come to a decision. You've got optimum planting days. If you pass that, you have to wait another year. There's some of that sort of alignment that needs to be done, and we're working on that. With that background, I would like to ask for Jane to quickly take you through to see what we do. And what we try to do, as I said, is convey to you what we do, and I think provide some hope and good news. There is a solution to the problem. I think that's the whole style of our presentation. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Lobsha.
Chairman, honorable members, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. We really, really appreciate what you might be able to do, and we want to offer our commitment as a start. We really want to make it work. The Farmer Development Program of Grain South Africa is funded also by the trusts, and through my presentation you'll see that we are so excited about working together with you because it can be a much more holistic approach to farmer development. Our mission is to develop capacitated black commercial grain farmers. I'll just go down here. The question people ask is, why do we want to do it? And if we have a look there are a number of reasons. We need a common and united voice in agriculture. Agriculture has been divided for too long, and we need to speak the same language. We need to have household and national food security. We take it for granted that there's going to be enough food, but we need to look very seriously at that. Agriculture remains the cornerstone of many economies, particularly in developing economies, which is what I'm sure is your major focus here, is to get the rural areas functioning optimally in terms of the economy. It's an important employer. A lot of people work in the agricultural sector. Rural prosperity reduces the pressure on urban resources. We all can see that. We know that we have to develop the rural areas. And then if 30% of the land is going to be in the hands of black farmers, they must produce 30% of the produce. It's no good giving them the land and we don't have the produce on it. Currently, we're working with the Grain Trust, as I mentioned, the Maize Trust, Oil and Protein Seeds Development Trust, Sorghum and the Winter Cereals. A number of commodity organizations are involved, the wool growers, red meat, ourselves, cotton SA, potatoes SA. The agribusinesses, Northwest, the Freyside Cooperative, Rates, Lady Brand, all these different institutions, they are involved to a degree, but we'll come to our challenges in a moment. The banks are involved. The Land Bank has recently brought out a new program, which I think is going to make a significant difference because people weren't able to access production loans, and if they did, they were too expensive. But they've brought out a new product now, which we're very excited about. And then, of course, all the input suppliers are involved and are willing to be involved. What are we doing? I don't want to go through our budget there. You can see we've last year we spent $16 million on development. Over the last 5 years, we've spent $66 million. And we are trying to develop farmers, and we're working with the individuals. Development is about people. Somehow in the past, we've been up the wrong road. We've been thinking that it's only about land, that it's only about machinery. And actually, development is about people. Our focus is on empowering the individual to become an independent farmer. We start by finding people where they are, and we build on the foundations that exist. And then we send the same message in different ways. If I could put it in a different way, we work on an asset-based development. In other words, not asking the person, what do you need, but by rather saying, what have you got, and how can we help you to use that better? So if you want communal land and you have half a hectare, how can we help you produce more on your half hectare? Or if you're a farmer that has access to 1,000 hectares that you've got through CLAS, how can we help you use that? So no farm is too small and no person is too insignificant. It's the individual that counts. Our program consists of study groups, demonstration trials to show people what the crops and things should look like, farmers' days to expose them to the industry, a Farmer of the Year competition to create role models so that people can see that other people have started at the bottom and got to the top. Advanced farmer support on a more individualized basis, farmer by farmer on his own farm. Training courses, we've got 22 different training courses. We've, in the last 5 years, put 13,000 people through courses. Radio broadcasts weekly, a Pula and Bula newsletter. So we have a relatively comprehensive program to support farmers. I wanted to show you these pictures to show you that it's very diverse. That's in KwaZulu-Natal. Interestingly enough, there's no one at the front. Those donkeys know what to do. Isn't that a lovely picture? But those farmers are farming at that level, and you can help them because you can help them use hybrid seeds, you can help them fertilize, you can show them how to do proper weed control, and they can get a good crop. Instead of getting half a ton a hectare, they can get 6 tons a hectare. This is the Eastern Cape, again. Do you see there's a mealy-leaf there? There is one. But if you look at the weeds, now you can imagine those weeds are competing for light, for air, for nutrients. So if we can control the weeds, that person will get a much better crop. Here we have, again, in the Eastern Cape, planting like that. I'm not saying that's where we want the people to be, but the point is that's where some of them are, so let's help them from there to move forward. Not everybody can afford a tractor now, but if they can just increase their yield, we can have security. There's a little bit of innovation that you can have a hand-drawn sprayer so you can control your insects and your weeds without the tractor. So you can do it if somebody's there holding your hand and helping you do it. There they are planting trials with tractors. There's the other end of the spectrum. That's the farmer in Bronkhorst Strait on state land. That's where he's got to. Look at those crops. That's in the Free State. You can hardly see the farmer. The maize is so good. That was a hand-planted crop at Mbuzini. So if you know what you're meant to be doing, you can do it well. However, whether you've got fancy equipment or whether you've got a hoe, you can do it properly. Look at those sunflowers near Rustenburg. During training courses, learning to calibrate a sprayer. wheat farming in the Eastern Free State, Ntatela Makapasa, excellent farmers in that area, in the Kestell area, harvesting wheat there. These are developing farmers, if you want to call them developing farmers. They can't develop much more. Look what they're achieving. It's wonderful. So let's get back to what is preventing us from moving forward. The low profitability of grain production is one of our biggest crises right now. It costs us more to grow the crop than the farmers can get for it. There is a market. People will tell you there's no market. There is a market. But it's 900 rand a ton for maize. You couldn't do it. 2 years ago, our farmers got 1,800 rand a ton for wheat. You can't afford to grow it. The lack of knowledge and skills and experience. Again, we can talk about the Department of Agriculture, and they are colleagues, but a lot of those people are inexperienced. They've got the knowledge from university, but they're inexperienced, and we need to empower them with hands-on with the skills. The lack of production finance has been a major stumbling block. A lot of people don't have title to land, as you know, and to overcome that, you need to secure your production loan through input insurance, but that only covers 65% of the cost, so guys can't access production finance. The poor condition of tractors and implements. Many farmers have, but they're in a bad condition. And there's no way that they can get financial support to repair those. And then infrastructure, on-farm and off-farm, particularly in some of the areas, like in the old Transkei and Ciskei in the Eastern Cape, you know, our roads, we haven't got silos, we don't have grain dryers and things like that. Those are all things that are making it difficult for these farmers. And if we can partner with your department and unlock money that's available for these farmers' development, we can address all these things and we can get those farmers moving. Our current position with the Department of Rural Development, last year Dr. Quibbis mentioned when we asked agriculture to help us and we didn't get it right, then Land Affairs came to us, or Rural Development should I say, we don't seem to be up to date with what we call the department. They came and they said, but they've got money, would we like to partner? And we said, of course we'd like to partner with you, we'd really like to help you. And it's not only helping you, it's helping the farmers, which is what we're about. So we've worked on an MOU with the department. We are waiting that MOU to be finalized so that we can sign it. And then we're going to involve the beneficiaries themselves, obviously, which is the most important thing. We don't farm for people. We help people to farm for themselves. And then we're hoping that we'll be able to, from your department, get grants for the land reform beneficiaries on that recap system, which I understand has been rethought, it's no longer 25%. And then also guarantees via Land Bank for production loans for farmers who are not your beneficiaries, who are either on private land or who are on communal land. That's what we're hoping to be able to finalize very soon with your department. We're working with Vusi Mahlangu and Edwin and so on up there. Our anticipated benefits from this cooperation is funding will be available for training and on-farm support. It takes a long time to develop a farmer. It's not something that you can put a time frame on and say 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, and then it must be done. The mechanization. There's a great need for purchasing and repairing existing mechanization. Unfortunately, the Department of Agriculture is continuing to give equipment to groups of farmers. We've seen this fail. You've seen this fail with Land Affairs. Grouping people together is not the solution because the conflict ends up stopping the whole process. So we are very much in favor of working with an individual farmer. We also want to be able to help farmers to acquire livestock, to use their resources optimally, their natural resource, production inputs, and even on-farm infrastructure. But that's all based on a business plan for an individual farmer, not a blanket approach that somebody said to me last week, oh, we must burn fire breaks for all the farmers. I said, no, that's not how Grain South Africa works. We want to look at each farm and see what does that farm need and how best can we use that the money available for that farm. Thank you very much. And what I've said here is together we hope to make a contribution to rural development and transformation of the sector. Chairman, if there are perhaps any questions, I would be very glad to answer.
Thank you very much.
Jane McPherson.
Okay. There is a presentation, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions. She has committed herself to answering all of them. You raised three issues that are that need clarity in my own mind. First, you indicated there's a new program by Land Bank. And you did not elaborate on that new program. You just said that you hope that it will make a better impact than it was the case in the past. Perhaps you could explain that so that we can have an understanding. The second one is that there are no silos in the Eastern Cape. My little experience is that the silos nearly everywhere in this case. Pedersen has a huge silos. Pedersen on your way to Craddock from PE. And there's a group of silos at the East London Harbour as well, which used to be taking grain into ships. They are the silos. But there are others which we discussed with the Askisa Eastern Cape. So I don't understand why you are not able to have access to those silos that are there in the Eastern Cape. They were meant for grain, by the way, not for anything else. The third issue that you raised was the MOU with the department. But in the context of the MOU, you raised the issue of doing away with 25% post-settlement grant, and it's a new thing now. So maybe the department will explain, but they may have explained to you. Those are the three clarities I would need from you. Thank you very much. But any other member who has a question, please, Ms. Wethebuka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. McPherson, for your presentation. I would just like to find out two things. One, how does Grain SA, under this program, identify farmers for development and training? On what basis? Is it geographical? Are there recommendations, etc.? The second question has to do with, you referred to other commodity organizations in your presentation. Do you know if they have similar programs in place? And if so, is there any integration between you about how you conduct these programs and how you identify beneficiaries? And in turn, is there a relationship between you as a group and the Departments of Agriculture and Rural Development and Land Reform?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by thanking Ms. McPherson for the informative presentation that you've made to us. Now it's clear what is Grain South Africa doing to capacitate our black commercial farmers. But I've got only two clarity questions. The first one is on your farmer of the year competition. According to my understanding, the department has got also the same program. Are the two programs being conducted separately, or are they integrated? Is Green South Africa part of that particular program? Then the second one is that on the Masibuye and the MSC Mini program, again, where the department is trying to encourage people to go back and till, where they provide them with tractors and implements. How do you integrate that to your own program so that at the end of the day you address that challenge that you have mentioned of the poor condition of tractors and implements? That's where the department has supplied these tractors and mechanization and other implements, then you also go there and assist because the equipment are there. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I was lucky to visit one of these farms last year, and Mr. Samuel Molloy, that was standing there between the leaves that you couldn't actually see the farmer when I visited some farms. I specifically went to look at Grain SA's program, so I'm quite familiar with what they're doing, and it's really great to see it in practice also on the land. And I think, you know, something...
You must always declare the fact that you're a farmer yourself.
Yes, I grew up between the millet fields, so I know that very well. Chairperson, one of the things that I got out of that visit was And it was mentioned here very quickly, is that the training of the extension workers of the Department of Agriculture. I know, Grain SA, I did train that, and at that stage there was a problem. I think they were stopped. So I just wanted clarity on that, and would that form part of the MOU? Or I know it's the MOU with our department, but what is happening with the Department of Agriculture regarding that? And then, Jane, you went very quickly about the production loan, 65%. That, so if we can just get clarity on that, because out of my visit, that was also the biggest challenge at that stage. So if you can just explain that to us a bit more slowly so that we understand that. And then, Mr. Lopesha, you mentioned you are helping 175 farmers, I think, at the moment. It links to what Honourable Mazibuko asked, how it's identified, and if you had more money, could you help more farmers, and do you have an idea how many more farmers could be helped if you had more money? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question again would be sort of following on what the old statement saying with regards to the figures that have been given for emerging farmers or substance farmers. In fact, my interest would be, is Grain South Africa, is it going out to reach the people out there, or just a matter of focusing on those substance farmers who are adjacent to the farms? Since it was, if one looks at what is happening outside there, it's only the people who one could see are those who are adjacent to the farms that do get assistance from the organization. And secondly, with regard to the exploitation of the produce of grain, if one may sort of find out what is any effect of genetically modified produce that is going out to the other countries, simply because I understand some of the countries do not expect, allow genetically modified stuff. What effect does it have for the produce in the organization? Thank you.
The question is, they see that you are assisting those that have got land, but there are those that have no land at all. Would you get involved in home, one garden? Is that what you can do, or you are doing?
Chairperson, thank you, and I would like to thank the presenters. I want to understand one. You know, most of us are coming from deep rural areas where individual families are trying to survive and under difficult conditions, climate change, weather, floods, you know, it affects them. And I know that most of them, when it comes to growing, mostly millet or whatever they use for their survival, they have to harvest them and take them to corporations in order to, at the end of the month, get a bag of millet meal in exchange for the bag of the grain that they've harvested. Yeah. I would like to understand what is the role of Grain SA when it comes to that, because I think those are the most affected people who need assistance. And like my colleagues have said, how do you identify areas? And do you focus on areas that are that dry? Because I've got my constituency in Limpopo, where, you know, most of the time it's dry. When it rains, nothing happens because it takes all the little that they've tried to put up there. How do you assist those type of people? Some of them have individual tractors. They've managed to buy a tractor here and there, a second-hand one. And in most cases, it doesn't work that much. But they assist the communities. But some approached me to say, is there anything we can do to just ask the government to get us, you know, just one sector so that it belongs to one community, so that we are able at the end of the year to be able to plant and then be able to survive? Because I think most of them, they don't even have an intention of becoming, you know, commercial farmers. It's just for survival. And I think this is where Grain SA can come the most. And if possible, I've been seeing provinces. I'm jealous because I didn't see Limpopo. And I wish I'd see where in Limpopo, so that I don't go home and say, no, we are not covered by Grain SA. If there's a person, there's a contact, I'll be very much happy to get that, to know exactly where in Limpopo. And I would like to understand also, there are presidential nodal points, and in Limpopo we have Skukumi, where what I'm talking about is mostly happening. How do you assist the government in as far as ensuring that presidential nodal points are assisted? Because I think we need all the assistance that we can get from whatever court. So I want to understand, what role can you play in that regard? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Rita. We have a long list of questions. Thank you very much. You made a promise. Answer all of them.
Thank you, Chairman. Can I first thank the gentleman on Monday for his pen?
Just one moment, please. Dr. Lopsha, we have read recently in the newspapers that there is an agreement signed, I think, between AgriSA, helped by the government, with two other countries that are buying all the excess maize that has been stockpiled without the market. Would you help us with an explanation on that regard, please? I'm just adding that additional question for you.
Just to give my colleague a little bit of breathing space, let me quickly attend to the current situation with regard to maize. I think it's common knowledge that South Africa has a huge surplus of maize that is the result of three very good years, and we're most likely to add to that surplus this coming year with the good weather conditions outside. So, yeah, we have a real challenge, and that adds to the detriment we experience on farm level of too low prices, and make production actually uneconomical. Now, regarding that specific reference you made to the transaction, that's currently still under negotiations. I also saw in the media yesterday that government, Mr. Langazita, is about to secure export possibilities to Saudi Arabia and India. Now, we work very closely with his department, within the so-called biosafety desk, to ensure that what can be exported is actually exported. Now, there are a lot of challenges. Grain South Africa is not in the trade, in a grain trade. We can at best facilitate ensuring efficiency regarding getting rid of the maize surplus. But as it stands, Chairperson, worldwide, we're suffering from the same consequences of an oversupply. We are fortunate in South Africa that the strong rand are protecting our consumers against what is currently happening outside globally with increasing grain prices. Just to give you an idea, in January, year on year, the price of American corn, same quality, increased by 27%, while South African price decreased by 28%. That gives you an idea of what's happening. So yes, these are dynamics outside of our control, but it impacts very aggressively on farm level. Hence our involvement in this endeavor, as you explained. But as you said, we try to find markets, but there are other challenges also. The question remains, must we continuously exporting unprocessed maize instead of processing it this side of the border, adding to job creation, stuff like that? And that's another discussion we will have with energy, with DTI, etc., but we're working on that.
Thank you, Chairman. I've tried to make a note of them with my colleague Penn here. If we could start with the land bank. Recently, it was I think in December or November last year, the land bank invited us to a launch where they are making large loans, bulk loans available to any agribusiness or anybody related to the industry. How it's working, that they give, let's say, to a cooperative with a loan at 0%, and then that cooperative or agribusiness, or if Grain South Africa would want to, we could then on-lend that money at 8% maximum. So that 8% is available to be used then for farmer support. And the loan guarantee is carried 50-50. So the land bank will carry 50% of the risk, and the organization will carry 50% of the risk, which has it has attracted the agribusinesses. I immediately contacted them all and said to them, look, now you haven't got an excuse, because a lot of the people say they won't lend money because the risk is high. But if they can borrow it from the land bank at 0% and carry only half the risk, their appetite has increased dramatically. So that is what we're excited about with land bank, apart from the other scheme where your department is going to guarantee. I know they're signing now 18.7 million guarantee, so we can lend to farmers who are not your beneficiaries, and then the department is standing guarantee. We're not going to tell the farmers that it's a soft loan and you needn't pay it back, because we're trying to encourage economic discipline. So the farmers need not know that you're standing guarantee, but it does mean that if there is a crisis, that then the money is guaranteed, because all these monies that are lent out to farmers are shareholders' money, and people don't want to lose it. And our farmers are a risk. Farming is a risk. Not only the black farmers are a risk, all farming is a risk. And so someone needs to help carry that risk. So that's the land bank package. As far as silos are concerned, if you go to the commercial areas, you have silos about every 20, 25 kilometers, because the farmers take it from the land in tractors and trailers and deliver it. If you take the deep rural areas, and they were talking about Limpopo, but let's talk about Eastern Cape, Lusikisiki, Bizana, those sort of areas. At Libode, I know that there are some silos, but the silos are far from where the farmers are, so it's very expensive for them to get it there. And if it's smaller quantities, how do they get it there and how do they fetch it? We're talking about the rural poor here, not the more commercial farmers. So that there is a challenge, and also of grain dryers, particularly when it comes to wet seasons like this. The crop on the land doesn't dry adequately, and in the commercial areas, you take it, deliver it, and they dry it for you and then store it safely. Whereas in the more rural areas, we don't have those facilities. I wouldn't say that's a crisis, but it is an issue that we need to look at. As far as the 25% is concerned, when we heard that this was available, 25% of the original purchase price of the farm, in some cases it's too much, and in other cases it's too little. Because some farms were bought 10 years ago, and the purchase price then compared to the purchase price now, it's not enough. So we've understood from the department that it's no longer being ring-fenced absolutely strictly 25% of the original purchase price. They would rather that one put together a comprehensive plan to say, this farmer needs this in order to be successful, which I think is a very, very much more balanced and sensible approach. That the 25% was a bit rigid. I mean, for some people it meant over 2.5 million rand. As a recap grant was too much, and other people were only going to get 100,000, which was too little. So I think it's a very sensible approach that. As far as how do we identify farmers, there were a couple of questions, and where do we work? We work on a voluntary basis, and to be a member of Grain South Africa costs the farmers 10 rand a year. And we have 7 offices, Nelspruit, Umtata, Vryheid, Kokstad, Lady Brand, Zeerust, And there's one more that I've forgotten. Doesn't matter. Anyway, we work everywhere, and not in Limpopo. So I'm ashamed to say that, and I keep looking you in the eye and thinking, we're not doing anything for you, but it's a question of money, but we'll come back to that. How we work is we go to the communities, we go to the departments of agriculture, if we come into a new area, to say, here we are, we want to help. And then we form study groups. Nobody is too small and nobody is too big. So if you are a person with a garden or you're a farmer in a communal area with a hectare or a half, you're welcome. And we start with study group meetings every month, and you come and you learn. You participate in training courses, you participate in farmers' days. And out of that, you find the people who are the more commercially minded. We don't stop servicing the others, but we pick out the more commercially minded people. So everywhere where we service, we've got, I think, 120 study groups with plus minus 20 people in it all over the areas I've mentioned. We've just recently starting in the Western Cape as well. We haven't been working here, but we've got money from the Winter Cereals Trust. We're limited by our funding. If we can get more money from the trust or from whoever, we will work wider. But it's a question of trust money that we use. And Limpopo, where the production is not all that commercial, our current funders say they want to fund the commercialization of grain production. So that's why we're currently not working in Limpopo, although I would agree that the need is almost the greatest there. We find Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal are the areas where our farmers are poorest, they're more rural communities. The potential for agriculture is huge in the East, not in Limpopo as much. But those farmers need more help and guidance. So we've got higher population densities on old tribal land, that's where the need is the greatest. We start with food security, but also going to commercial. As far as the other commodities are concerned, somebody asked that question. The other commodities all have a program, but none of them as large as Grain South Africa. And again, I think it's a question of funding. I know Potatoes SA tries to find 7 farmers a year. That's the extent of their program. So they do have a program, but it's limited. We work with them wherever we can, because we, in our current funding situation, are limited to the grains. We are not allowed to talk livestock because our fund of money doesn't allow that. So wherever we can, we work together with the other commodities. But we're hoping that once we're working with your department, that we'll then be able to be more holistic, to be able to support in terms of livestock as well. Because when you're there, you might as well talk everything. As have one person coming today about red meat and somebody else coming tomorrow about wool, and then you coming the following day about maize. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's better to offer a comprehensive service. This Masibuyeni Emasimini program, in particularly in Mpumalanga, we come back to the issue of the shared equipment. Now, in theory, the shared equipment's a very good idea, because not each person can afford their own tractor, so if they have shared equipment, it's going to work better. In practice, it's very challenging, because most areas, we're limited by rain. When the rain falls, everybody wants to work. So everybody wants the tractor now, and in 2 months' time, nobody needs the tractor. So what we have done, we've tried to say to the department, please don't do that. Please rather give individuals tractors. But I'm afraid we're talking to deaf ears. They don't hear us because they say it's more cost-effective to give it to communities. So all we can do is we have training courses. We've got a mechanization management course where we help people to say, if you're going to share equipment, what are the pitfalls? What are you going to fight about before you fight? Because let's address all those issues. Are you going to pay to use it? Who may drive it? Who may use it first? How much may each person use it for? So there are a number of challenging issues, but if that's the only way we can help them, well, then we've got to help them. It's no good saying, we told you it wouldn't work, because then you aren't helping anybody. But things like the repairs and maintenance, servicing, who pays for that, who does it, it's very challenging. It really is. There are a lot of places where the equipment has come to a standstill. I'm trying to think where that Matibidi, I don't know if you people know where Matibidi is, up there north near Limpopo. And they've got 10 tractors, 10 of everything. It's all standing, because it breaks and then nobody's taking responsibility to fix it. So it is very challenging now. So we try it wherever we can. We will work with anybody, and we'll try and make anything work, but it is difficult. The input insurance, I'm sorry, I did brush over that quickly. I don't want to bore you with all the details. If you take, for example, that to plant a maize crop costs you 5,000 rand a hectare, your income, let's say you're expecting 5 tons at 1,200 rand a hectare, let's say, Dr. Kruger, you can help me with my sums. Let me go to 1,000 rand, I'll make it easier. Let's say we're going to get 5 tons at 1,000 rand, our income is 5,000. You insure it at 5,000, but the input insurance covers 65% of that. So let's just say off the top of my head, they guarantee 3,600. But in fact, it has cost you 5,000. So if you get a crop failure and they have to pay, they're only going to pay the 3,600. So there's a shortfall of 1,400 that nobody is prepared to cover. So if you are the institution lending the money and you've got to lend 5,000, but you've only got a guarantee for 3,600, you're not prepared to lend it. And that's the problem that we face. And the input insurance is expensive. It can be 800 or 900 rand a hectare. So you're adding that cost to your cost, and then they aren't even guaranteeing the whole 5,000 that you need. So we can tell you what's wrong with a lot of things, but we try to be positive. So we're trying to work around issues and see if this is the wall that's in front of us, how are we going to find a road around it? Because to transform agriculture, that isn't negotiable. We must do it. But the thing is now to find roads around. And each time you come up upon something, you think out the solution, only to find there's another challenge around the corner, and then another. Now we've got floods. Last year we had drought. So we're always challenged to see how we're going to make it work. What did we have here? If we had more money, could we help more people? Absolutely. Since I've been there 7 years now, we started off with 4 people and 2 million rand. We've now got to 19 full-time and 16 million rand, and we've also got 13 part-time trainers. So what limits us is the funding. If we could have more money, we would be able to do more. You can never say that what you're doing is successful, because farming keeps you humble, but we definitely have good farmers, and there are people who are being successful. So I honestly believe that what's limiting us is the money. If we had more money, we could do more. I'm going to leave the export of grain to Dr. Quivis, but remembering that the GMO grains, I will give you an example here. This isn't entirely GMO. We do sorghum development north of Zeerust in Leurudzi. And one day I was at a sorghum day there, and there was a very, very old man with very thick glasses. And now I'm sure you all know there are two types of sorghum. There's a sweet sorghum that is loved by people, but it is loved by the birds as well. And then there's a bitter sorghum that people don't like, but the birds don't like it either. So if you plant sweet, there's a chance that you won't harvest much, because the birds get there before you do early in the morning. If you plant the bitter, you don't really want it, but at least you'll get it. And one day at a farmer's day, they were talking sweet, bitter, sweet, bitter, and the farmer's complaining, and this old man said, "The bitter is bitter, but it's not as bitter as being hungry." And I thought it was such a wise thing to say. Now, the same with the GMO. If you take our national crop, before GMOs, I think our national crop was 2.3 or 2.7 tons a hectare. We're over 4 tons a hectare now. Now, if you're a rich person, you can afford to say, "I don't want to eat GMO." But if you're a poor person, and it's you, salvation or GMO, I'll tell you what I'll choose. It's GMO. So I know people are concerned, but you know, we're always afraid of the unknown. And quite honestly, I don't think we need to be afraid. We're all eating GMO. But there are people who grow GMO-free, and we can export GMO-free. I know SA Breweries, for one, we do work for them. SA Breweries grow GMO-free into their beer. So if you drink beer, you're fine. You're not getting in the GMO. So drink more beer and eat less maize. So I'm only joking. So yes, the GMO, but what if they want GMO-free, they get GMO-free. There's, you know, there is a record kept of that, so we don't need to worry about that. The small lands, as I mentioned before, we work with anybody. My personal philosophy is, if somebody's getting half a ton a hectare on their 1 hectare, and you can help that person to get 5 or 6 tons a hectare, you've made a difference in that person's life. I'm very much against this attitude of, that isn't a commercially viable proposition. We're not talking only what's commercially viable. If somebody has today 2 rand and tomorrow they have 4 rand, they're better off. If you have a half a ton this year, next year you have 5 tons, you're better off. You can sell, you can feed more into your community, and you can join the market. So for us, there's no limit. Our funders like us to look at the more commercial ventures, but you always have to start somewhere. So we start with people wherever they are. Nothing is too small for us to help them. The communal tractor and contractors, I think I've said enough about that. We try to make it work, but it is extremely challenging. And the last question I haven't addressed was the Farmer of the Year. Yes, the department has their own. We don't work with them on that particular project. It's our development program's Grain Farmer of the Year. So we select the candidates from our program that we are taking further, and then we get winners from that and role models. It's the more commercial farmers. Somebody asked how many farmers we're working with. In terms of our whole study group structure, we must have over 3,000 farmers. We have 152 farmers that were eligible for production loans, which were the ones where this whole debate started. But we have a lot more farmers. And again, with more finance for the program, we could handle more farmers. It's finance is what limits us. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Fixer. Usually, Dr. Lobsha, it is not advisable to discuss a presentation in the presence of the presenter. But I think the questions that have been asked have assisted. She did not deal with one home, one garden, and the role of Grain SA. And Ms. Pava is very upset that you didn't deal with that.
Chairman, I thought it was sort of covered in the small farmers. So we don't promote the production of vegetables, and it's not because we're against it. It's simply that we're funded by the trusts, the grain trusts. So if a person only has access to their home garden, but they want to be part of our study groups and attend courses and learn how to do whatever they're doing better, we accept them. But we don't actually go out promoting vegetables, and again, it's not because we don't want to, it's because of our financial constraints.
Because it is true that this woman that is presenting about the tractor community. Pitini uLundi ne babana kuno kanakanda lapha abanikezele ngabo labo kanakanda baona umuntu oyi-1 and abanye abantu abathuli bengifuna ukuthola ke the ukuthi what is the criteria abayiyuzayo ukuthi labo kanakanda babe avele kibo bonke abantu mhlambe bengayinceda nje kuthini uma behambe izo kanakanda ababize umphakathi wonke noma bezawabeka emzini othile or mhlambe eofisini elithile kodwa umphakathi wazi ukuthi kuno kanakanda bafikile la bazosiza thina sonke abona bomuntu abomphakathi ukuze umphakathi bawunenkinga yokulima ukwazi kuya lapho ukuthi ngizocela ukanakana ufuna ukungilimela ngedate so babhalwe kwilisti bonke abantu ukuthi ngedate sekuyolinywa kwabantu ngedate sekuyolinywa kwabantu ngedate ngoba ngempela ngempela omunye ukanakanda bangifonela pithini uLundi nebabana ngathi ukanakana sewuzufile awunamuntu ozowukhanda phela ngoba awunamnikazi but wanikezwa induna yendawo kodwa uzosiza umphakathi awuzange usize umphakathi induna endaba ilimela ihlobo zayo ngalokanakana ilimela abangani bayo yabona abanye abantu bengasizakali kodwa ukanakanda bezile bebuya kwi-department yabo bona laba basiza abalimi i-Grain SA so ngifuna ukuchaza ke ukuthi cha ngiyavumelana naye lokhu akushoko kodwa ake besebenzisa indlela kuti nabahambisa ukanakanda bangayi kwisikhulu esithile babiza umphakathi wonke bathi ufuna umphakathi uphelele kele lapho kanakanda sizobabeka la uma nifuna ukulinyelwa nizobhala kube nelisi esho ukuthi namhlanje kanakanda uya kwabani endaweni ehloko namhlanje kanakanda uya kwabani endaweni ehloko ube ne-direction babo ubenikeza i-direction e-right ngokanakanda ngiyabonga ke
She's moving away from one home, one garden into tractors. It would be wise for you to explain when you give the tractor to an individual, how can the community have access to that tractor? Because your own experience is that the individual gets the tractor, but it is used for friends and relatives. And not for the whole community. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the tractor belongs to the community, even though it must be kept or used by one individual, that individual would then, the community would have access to that tractor. She then cited the Ulundi Babanango area where this problem is, and he wants to know how do you control access for the community, even though the tract is given to one individual.
Chairman, thank you. I don't actually have the answer, because the farmers that we work with mostly on the advanced farmer program are people that have their own equipment and tractors. So in other words, he's working for himself. What we have also seen work is where you have somebody who acts as a contractor for others. But then again, you have the problem that that person becomes very money-driven, and they end up asking more than they should be asking per hectare. So you see, it comes back to the challenges of the communal system where you've only got a very small piece of land to work on. That's why a lot of what we do is to say to the farmer, well, what equipment have you got? If you haven't got a tractor, have you got an ox then? Well, how are you going to work your land? Because then you're in control. I understood them saying there should be a list, but you know now there's a list. The first is you and the second is me, but it rains on the first. And so they can't work your land on the first. So now do they miss you, and do I get it the next day, or does everything move down? It just becomes so challenging, and everybody ends up fighting over it. So it is very, very difficult to know what to do. I would say that the biggest thing would be to actually train and support the group to know, to make ground rules, how are we going to use the tractor that you don't have, either of not doing any work at all or being exploited by one individual. It remains a challenge. It really does. But we must face it and deal with it. You know, now all we're doing is we're giving it to them and then we're saying, well, you know, carry on, and it is not working.
Chairperson, I just want to, for clarity purposes, just want to state Grain South Africa.
Excuse me, Dr. Lodge. Mr. Zuber has got a follow-up question. I don't know whether it's related to this tractor business or something else, so that you, when you respond, you could deal with her input as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is about tractors, because clearly between Grain SA and the government, because the minister in Parliament is consistently telling us about how many tractors have been handed out to how many communities and on what basis, and it seems to be a policy that the department is very proud of, and you seem to have taken a different view that individuals can manage them better, and I can understand if a group owns something, how does that group maintain that thing? So my question to you is, to what extent do you have a relationship with the department in terms of policy making? Because I would be more likely to trust an industry player than a politician to make decisions about what is the more suitable thing. So do you have a relationship with the department? Do they consult with you on matters of policy and with the other commodity groups? And if so, in what way? My second question is about your relationship on this particular program with the beneficiaries of the program. Is there some moment in your relationship when you decide, okay, we've set you up, we've trained you, you've attended this many study groups, you've yielded this many crops, whatever. We've decided now that you are ready to continue in your individual capacity. Is that how it works, or is it a continuous relationship that goes on, for the foreseeable future? The reason I'm asking is because you mentioned you aligned your targets with the government's 30% target for black ownership of land, and you said that, you know, 30% of farmers must produce 30% of the food. So is there some way to quantify this? Will a day come in your mind, only in respect of grain farmers, so working with the percentage of the industry that you are occupying, let's say for argument's sake it's 5%, when 5% of the grain farmers will produce 5% of the grain? I mean, do you have a goal in mind for your particular section of the industry? I have one more question. Because, again, the Rural Development Department is very committed to educational programs and has, you know, come before this committee to tell us about, you know, how it's partnered with higher education and with some training colleges. Do you have any kind of relationship with formal agricultural training colleges and institutes? Is there some way that you can impart your understanding of what's happening in the field to people who are training as their first, you know, competency, their only competency, training up emerging farmers? Do you have any kind of relationship either with the higher education department or with the actual colleges themselves? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Lamsha.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I will leave most of the difficult questions to Jane. No, I'm kidding. I just want to put it on record that Grain South Africa's involvement, and when we talk about using, making tractors or equipment available for farmers, it's because we involved from the site. It's not our business. Our business is to take a farmer what he has and take it from there. But we've been confronted in many instances, you know, by farmers, how can I get access to a tractor or equipment owned by the community? I think Jane has alluded to that very elegantly, saying that it's not our preference, but in the event that we can assist, we will do so. What we must understand, Chairperson, is the challenge and the demand for what we do is so great. It's by far exceeding what we can do. You referred to our involvement with extension officers. I think what we said. In the beginning, we were asked to train extension officers of the department, which we did, but it was stopped by the funder. Said, this is not your core business. There's a need for that, but we cannot. It's not part of our involvement in terms of from the funder side, and we have to adhere to what the funders say, where they put, you know, what they do, for what we use the money. So the whole issue of tractors and by whom is owned, we rather want to step away from that because that's not part of your policy. We like to deal with it as part of the resources available. Preferably, we wouldn't like to get involved, you know. So from my own point of view, as an economist, an expert on it, I cannot agree more with what has been said in terms of the challenges. In some communities, it will work, but for the major part, that's not even work for commercial white farmers. As we said, if it rains, I need to prepare my land right now. Who will be first? And that was part of the problem we had with contractors, you know. There was people that making contractors available. You start with farm A, and by the time you reach farm C, it's too dry already. So farm C cannot really benefit from that, you know. So the preference is to empower the individual farmer with knowledge to use his resources. So what Jane and his team do, we now train the people, and on the Nampo farm outside of Waterville, we train the new farmers into how to use this equipment and how to use second-hand equipment and how can we get workarounds around that to get it in, because we know that you do not jump into successful farming. You grow into a successful farmer, you know. And so, yes, we assist in that regard. So let's, if we can, walk away from the tractor in the community. That's not part of our cake and challenge. We have our ideas, but it's not for us, you know, to be critical as far as that's concerned. Thank you.
Chairman, to add to what Dr. Quibbs is saying here, it's true. Tractors and equipment is not our business. But if you're helping a farmer to produce grain, he quite soon moves over to the size where he needs equipment. You know, on 1 hectare or 2 hectares, you can maybe still do it by hand, but bigger than that, you need equipment. So we inadvertently get involved in the whole tractor and machinery issue. And we can tell you what doesn't work, and we can tell you that individuals work, but I can also understand that from the government's point of view, you can't possibly afford to give every individual a tractor. So we need to think our way around how we're going to make that work. I'll give an example now. There's a place called, it's near Cullinan in Mpumalanga. There must be 30 tractors standing there. They haven't worked this year because there's no working capital. So there's a whole shed full of tractors and equipment, and they've been parked there all year because the Department of Agriculture got given the tractors, but there was no money for diesel. So no, there's no plan, so they all stand there. The other thing is the drivers are the employees of the department. Now, as you all know, you people in the department work from 7 to 4 or 8 to 5, Monday to Friday. Now, if you're a farmer, you don't work from 7 to 4. You work from 4 until 4, and then until 4 again. You don't know whether it's day or night. Now, I don't see how that's going to work. Now, coming back to the lady's question about the department, I can honestly tell you that we reach out with all our hands and our toes as well to say, please, can we work with you? In some cases, it works very well, and we found the cooperation good. As far as the national department's concerned, I must be honest to say to you that we don't seem to get through to them. We have meetings, and the meetings are put off, and then the meetings put off again. We had a meeting with the DG, Dr. Wilhelms, and I went to Pretoria. He was in Cape Town, and it was a set meeting. So it is a frustration to work there, but we haven't come here to tell you what's not working, because we need to keep trying and making it work. As far as policy is concerned, there's a certain subdivision in the department, national, that we're working with now. and they are the policy making section, and we have a pilot project with them on 15 farms to see how you can best use money from government to make farmers sustainable. One of the things we're looking at now, which I think is quite interesting, is that you don't want to decrease your support to a farmer. You want to start small, giving him, let's say, production support for 50 hectares. If he's doing well on the second year, instead of making it less, make it more. And on the third year, make it more again. Because you want to reward the person who's doing well. If you start at the level and decrease it, as the person gets onto their feet, you withdraw your help and they fall down again. So we don't want to keep helping people from scratch. Reward the people that are doing well. As far as the exit strategy, that is one of the challenging things, because you build a relationship of trust with that person and you don't want to let them go and they don't want to let you go either. But we do gradually wean farmers. You know, you start out having a lot of contact with them, and then later on, like last year's Farmer of the Year, he said, would we go with him to Land Bank? He's in the process of buying another farm. So that's the kind of help that you're giving. So you're not going on holding his hand in the land, but you're helping him at a different level. But yes, we are weaning farmers. We developed what we call our 250-ton club. That is to say, you've reached the milestone. You get a bronze badge if you're a 250-tonner. You get a silver badge if you're a 500-tonner. And you get a gold badge if you're a 1,000-tonner. And we've got 42 members of that club. I think there are 10 who've produced more than 1,000 tons of grain in 1 year. So, yes, there are people that are doing well. And we also keep close to them because we need to be reminded that there are successes. It's very challenging, Chairman. It's not all easy, and particularly with grain prices being so low, it's challenging. And we also hang on to our successes just so that we can keep motivated.
You, Ms. Master. I was promised earlier by Dr. Lofsha that the two other farmers that you brought along would share their experiences with us. The unfortunate part is that we've given you more than an hour for your presentation. It will eat on the time that we set aside for other presentations. But if they have anything that they want to share with us, I can give them a little time. Because it will be a shame for them to travel all the way from Eastern Free State and sit in a meeting in Parliament, listen to other people and not talk themselves.
I'm Joseph Moleme. I'm farming at Pumfundi district on the Lane Vent Road. I started there at day two in 2008 because I was coming from another farm next to the Kalben River at the outskirts of Lady Vent. But I left that place because it's next to the Lesotho border, because people there were stealing. They stole 96 sheep from me. It was during the year of 2003, but I left that place. I came to the land affairs and they gave me another place as a caretaker. I am now a caretaker at that place I've mentioned, that it was the area of Brendan's Cats at N8 Road. The Grain SA came to me in 2008 when I was given that I took that farm as a caretaker. They came to me and asked me what I needed, and I told him that the only thing I need is just to enter you to their training, that they can just offer me the training courses. Well, they gave me some training courses. But thereafter, in 2009, they said that we have got some programs, like a wheat program. Can you attend the course program in progress? I need it thereafter. Well, in 2009, they assisted me with 64 hectares to plant that wheat. Well, I started too late because the funds from the government came too late for me to assist. I produced close to 125 tons in those hectares. In a hectare, I've harvested 1.9 per ton in a hectare. So it was good on my side because I was owing them 147,000 rand, but I paid it in full settlement. And thereafter, the department gave me, it was to 30,000 rand. Yes. Then after that, I bought a tractor. Although it was not in good condition, well, I used it that when I was trying to, towards the end of the year, or at the same very year, on the 2009, when I was trying to plant the sunflower, well, it broke down because it was a second-hand tractor. And the field for me was too big for it to cover with friends. But well, thereafter, I went back to the KNSA to go and ask an assistant from them. But they said to me that because you are a caretaker, we can't help you because you were in the program of wheat. But this now you are asking a loan for on a program, or you are not on a program of sunflower. You are a caretaker there. So the OVK said to me that we can't assist you because that land doesn't belong to you. You don't have a tax deal on the land. So we can't assist. I tried to come to the land bank. The land bank says to me, no, you don't have a tax deal on that. You are a caretaker. Now we can't assist you in that. That is the problem we are facing on the land are too much because we have got lands. The lands are there. You can't do anything on the land. Yeah, you've got some few livestock. When you're trying to sell them, yesterday, well, I sent my tractor today. When I said to you that the tractor for me, the one I have used, the second hand, it broke down. When I went, I sent it to the service to go and repair it. Yesterday, when I was on the plane coming here, they see that it was 14,000 rand. So, well, I told them that I will come and see them when I come from Cape Town. The livestock that I have are not so many to cover that I've got only 22 cattle. Those 22 cattle can't cover my needs because when I'm 14,000, I think it would be 4 cows to sell that. Well, I subtract 22, 4 from 22, take out 4 from that day, I would be left with 18. Now I see, well, I told them that, well, just wait, I'll see until the end of June, when I've harvested something, because I didn't plant so much in my field, because by the time when I was trying to plow the land and plant, the rain was too much. I didn't go into the fields. Well, I've planted a few, but I told them that I will see what can I add to in June. But if the government can assist in conjunction with that, maybe the black farmers like us, who has got some experience and training courses offered by the King's House and other institutions. Well, I think we can do more. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you. Roadmark.
I'll give you a report, sir. I go to the man that can talk. I go to the young water. I go to the plus. When the bus race starts, I get to the border right. Waarvan die hoofinkomste uit melkery bestaan. Ek het deel geword van Graan Suid-Afrika so 3 jaar terug deur 'n studiegroep wat ons gestig het. Ons is om en by 12 in die studiegroep. Ek het verskillende kursusse deurloop by Graan Suid-Afrika. Ek is ook gehelp deur die staat vir my te voorsien van tractor en implemente. Maar die probleem is, die goed is op die plaas, maar daar is nie geld om dit aan die gang te hou nie. Die melder help my maar om stapgewys aan te gaan. Ek het nou mielies geplant, en ongelukkig met die vreselike reën wat ons gehad het, is alles onder water, hulle is weg. Ek kla nie daar oor nie, maar ons gaan maar weer probeer die volgende seisoen. Ek beplan om koring te plant, maar as ek gaan kyk na die kostes om koring in te sit en wat ek gaan kry in die einde van die dag as die oes daar is, weet ek ook nie of dit winsgewend gaan wees nie. Ek het net so geluister na die dame wat praat van die groep saam te werk. Ek is ook in 'n groep en ek moet sê dat dit gaat moeilik. Op hierdie stadium is ek die enigste wat werk. Ek is die enigste wat moet finansieel bydra. Die ander wil net ontvang. Dit is baie moeilik, jy weet, om daar boos te wees, om te sê, dit moet so gedoen word. Rechtig, meneer, dit is baie moeilik. Mens, bly net mens. Aan die einde van die dag, kom hulle, as daar oester is, as hulle vir jou onverreer. Maar hulle was nie by toe jy begin het met die inzette daarvan. So die ding van groepe implemente gee, trekkers gee, werk nie altyd nie. Dit klink goed, maar in die praktijk werk hy nie. Dit is baie moeilik om mense tevrede te stel as julle groep is. Jy weet, een man en een vrou het verlief geraak op mekaar, maar in die huis dit lewe nog. Nou hoeveel te meer, as ek en jou zeg, ons is niks van mekaar nie. Ons moet saamwerk, ons gaan maklui. Dit is ongelukkig so, en dit is waar die probleem leer met ons zwart boer. Ek weet nie of dit een kwestie van dat ons nie mekaar vertrouw wat die story is. Maar ek voel dat die regering kan, as hy sy hand in sy sak gesit het om my te help, help my ten volle, dat ek in die einde van die dag kan kos voorsien aan die land. Moet my nie help halfpad of op een kwart van die gedeelte nie, dan help het ook niks nie, want dan gaan ek ten gronde. Dankie meneer.
Dankie om jou aan, mistijd. Ek het alles gehoor, maar ek weet nie of allemaal gehoor.
Chairperson, Jan nie? Jan farms in the Eastern Free State. He's on a mixed farming system. I understand that he's planting grapes. Wat is scoring in Engels?
Wheat.
My first language is Afrikaans, Chair, so you're asking the wrong person to translate it. But he's also assisting his farming with milk, just because it's difficult to farm with maize. It's now, last year it was dry, now it's raining, so he don't know if he will get any money from that. He was helped 2 years ago by Grain SA, started in the program. He's part of a study group. There are 12 in the study group, I think. He has attended different courses of the study group. He got some assistance from the state in the help of tractors and other implements, but they never got any money for diesel and to work with this equipment. And he was explaining that he's part of a group, and maybe we can ask if it's only for using of a tractor or also on the land that you got, that it's maybe it's one of those our red plus farms where all the people together got a farm. And he said, being working together in a group, using one tractor and one piece of land as part of a group, it's been very difficult and challenging. Up till now, he's been the only person that's working there. But when the money comes in, everyone wants some of this money, but the others don't do work. So he say that doesn't work. And that, I think that's, can't remember the last part. Oh, the fighting. He was saying he fell in love. I think you all understand with your wife, and the two of you fight. So if you are part of this group, and there's a lot of fighting happening because you're not even in love with each other, you just have to work together. And he was saying something that I will make a comment on while I'm translating. Chair, I'm using this opportunity to say that he said maybe this black people don't trust each other. I can tell you, I live on a farm with my husband, and my father-in-law is also there with us, and it's not a black thing. It happens everywhere. If you have to work together, you will always have challenges. So, you know, it's not a matter of not trusting each other. It's, as Jan explained, because everyone wants that thing now. It's rain, so this must happen. So I think maybe that's all, Jay.
Professor Lopsa, we're going into the second hour. In fact, we're finishing the second hour now of your presentation. It's a valuable sharing of information, but I think we will kill the other presentation if we don't stop now. I know that you want closing remarks, but I would have difficulty justifying taking a lunch break for the other two presentations before they finish. I'll give you 1 minute.
Chairperson, I will be not irresponsible if we conclude this by leaving you without hope. I can state that we're working with the department to get a new dispensation. That dispensation will mean that we will engage in assisting farmers by means of a agreed upon business plan to enable this farmer, you know, to take it further. So that's what we're currently working on. I think that's that we leave you with that. Then also we leave you with a DVD. Part of our involvement is to get young people interested in farming. It would be worth your while to look at this, to see what we do to sell agriculture as a career. Look at this. This is what we try to put to together, and that gives us hope. So, Chairperson, don't go away in despair. We will get something workable because agriculture is too important, you know, that we step away, not unlocking the potential. But thank you very much for your concern, for your support, and just watch the scoreboard. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lobsha. In China, there are 1.3 billion people. And the Chinese government has taken the responsibility that every mouth must be fed every day. And they take the responsibility to produce the rice. And everything else will be added to the rice, but the staple meal is rice in China. So they look at the land, they say, where is the land available to plant rice? And they take the responsibility to work with the owners of the land and that land that belongs to the state to produce adequate tonnage of rice to feed everybody every day. And I think it's a marvelous responsibility for any government to say, we have to feed all these mouths every day with grain, whatever form of grain that is available or eaten in that particular area, and where is the land which will be useful for that purpose, and take responsibility to make sure that you produce. It should not be the responsibility of Grain South Africa. Grain South Africa should be a partner to make sure government can achieve its target, its responsibility. But it is the responsibility of the nation to feed itself. Should not be one, you know, there's a saying in America, each one for himself and God for us all. We cannot throw our hands in the air and ask God to help us when we're doing nothing to help ourselves. So it should be a collective responsibility to do that, with government leading in the front. As a committee here, Dr. Lobsha and your team, we think that the working relationship that you're trying to forge between yourselves and agriculture and rural development, it should be openly or clearly spelled out in the MOU that rural development is not about one department. Rural development is about all departments of state. Agriculture has to be part of this picture. Should not be an MOU that will be focusing on rural development only, because the Department of Rural Development is the facilitator for the involvement of all other departments. The money that you're talking about, which Omiyan Borders was complaining about, if the Department of Rural Development is making a contribution in the form of a guarantee for loans of land bank, what we need to see is whether the other departments could not feed the mouths when the crops fail, instead of saying, we must go and fetch that guarantee from the department because the crops have failed. There are other departments whose responsibility it is to feed the mouths that have nowhere to go. So there is a collective responsibility here. Our responsibility is to follow up on your presentation with the various departments. We will talk to our colleagues, chairs of other committees, to see whether collectively we cannot have another session with you. Perhaps you could invite some of the grain partners of yours to be part of that, so that collectively we could work out a program that would say, Ms. McPherson was saying, your target is food security. Now, if the target is food security, it is the responsibility of everybody to put the shoulder to the wheel to ensure that this country, what China has is taking for granted, is something that we can do together. We did that for the World Cup. Why can't we do it for the food? Thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation. We now go to specialized oil. But if Dr. Lobshen team want to leave, you may take your leave. It's not a problem. But if you want to stay and listen to specialized oil, you are welcome to stay.
Thank you very much for this invite, but we have another appointment also to really appreciate, and especially for the other colleagues that we work in their time, we really appreciate.
Thank you very much. And we can afford a 5-minute comfort break while they're setting up. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. 5-minute comfort break. 5 minutes should not be more than 5 minutes. Please.
Gracias. that we can use to those.
No.
Any clarities you need. Yes, Ms. Wanyamavira, stain and cover. Ladies only.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank the presenters for presenting about this project that they have in Zambia. Chair, only three questions. What I want to check is that when grafting, do you graft all the trees in that particular community, or you select, you identify the trees that are supposed to be grafted? The second one is that when you graft these trees, are you grafting them free, or maybe is there any amount of money that the household is supposed to pay? Then the last one, who is funding you currently? And also the grafters, how much are they? Are they getting maybe for them to be able to put bread on their table? Thank you.
You have to stand up. The real reason why we're sitting whilst we're talking is not because we have no respect, just that it's convenient for you to talk and also write.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's so nice to see so much passion here this morning from the people presenting. And it's also nice to see that I think in both the last presentations, people keep mentioning, you know, use what you have. And I think that's what we've been missing all along in South Africa. We've tried to bring along new things from somewhere. I don't know. We must just go back to the land. And that's what this department is so important in this. Chairperson, my question was around the meeting with the MEC and the district or the premier. Which department is the Department of Agriculture that you've met with, and in Limpopo will that also for, I know it's not always correlating with the national, is it agriculture and rural development, or I just want to understand which MECs is involved there. And then, did you make a presentation or did you apply, like at Grain SA, with National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform for their recapitalization program? And maybe it's unfair to ask you, but I don't know if it extends into the Limpopo province, the recapitalization program for the National Department of Rural Development, because I think that is important to understand that I understood from the department that actually the request must come from you. The department can't connect with you. It must be the other way around. So just for a technical point of view, but I was covered with the grafting from...
Thank you, Shepherd. Shepherd, you know, I'm Jay Umbozo. I'm going to find a lot of my money. I'm going to be able to. I'm going to be presenter. I'm a presenter and say, when I predict, I'm going to be able to. Especially include Abu Mama Abaning. But the other one is a good thing. Njengoba iyasho idokumenti yabo ukuthi creating continuous sustainable amount of jobs while benefiting the poor of the poor, the poorest of the poor. Then ngifuna ukuqonda-ke chair ukuthi ngabe labo mama bama-partnership nabo noma basebenza ngaphansi kwabo. Or just ngeke sasho ukuthi sifuna ukwazi ukuthi iphaza bahola malini just nje. I'm a part of member of project or my siblings. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you. I think most of the questions were covered by my colleagues, but I've been complaining about Limpopo not being mentioned the first time, but now specifically to Limpopo, I feel like jumping because we eat and wash with food in Limpopo. And what I would like to establish is these factories that are producing oil. What are your plans? How many do you plan establishing? And in there, I would have appreciated if one of the ladies that we saw on the telescope here was here to tell us personally their own experience and their own excitement of how they started and what do they see the future is. And I think as a committee, or maybe if it's possible, if we can go there just to go and see for ourselves, because Limpopo, most especially the region that is being talked about, Vembe, has a lot of food, wild, and you name it. Everything goes in the wild. And if there's a way that it can be utilized to create employment and to create a better life for the people, then this is a very good initiative. But I would have appreciated if they were here to talk for themselves, to tell the committee exactly their experience, where they've started, and from there, what is their future. But I appreciate this. And I want to understand the role of the traditional leaders, because there we are talking about traditional leaders. What is their role? How are they involved? How are they getting on board? And the department itself, I know it's the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. What assistance are they giving? What role are they playing in this instance? And for now, how many cooperatives are we talking about? If you can give us a breakdown of how many women are there, how many men, how many youth, I think it will assist us a lot. Thank you, Chairperson. You can see I'm excited because it's all about Limpopo now. There's no competition.
My question is from you, Mr. Skilbert. From the chair, I want to find out whether in your research avocados like bananas can grow in which areas of South Africa, because you keep on saying nationally, but which areas are suitable for the growing of avocados, bananas, lychee, and so on. Because if you look at your job statistics, there's a possibility of a 500 jobs in this one project only. Whereas if we follow the president's cry, if we create jobs in areas where these types of fruit grow, then we can create even more than 500. You can take the floor now.
I'm not sure if you go up to the Mopani region, because Mopani and Capricorn, there are a lot of marula trees. If there's anything, any initiative of also embarking on that, because we have a lot of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. The first question was, do we graft all the trees? The answer is yes, but not all at once. To make it eco-friendly,
we would do, say, half the trees of the household 1 year and the other half the next year, simply so that there is still some greenery around, and the next year the grafted trees will replace the greenery that there was. So that's the first answer. The cost of grafting, the cost of this whole project has been borne by specialized oil extraction as a pilot project, because it was not something we wanted to talk about until we've had some evidence that it works. And we believe it's worked beyond expectation. And I will later answer question number 5, where the lady said, can we speak to those people? I'd love you to speak to those people. The enthusiasm is 10 times more than mine. And you don't need to tell people what to do. They want to do it. They're absolutely mad about the project. And when you see them, they will tell you. So who was funding it? We were funding it. And what were the people getting to do it? We were paying all the expenses. We didn't pay the people of the villages. They didn't ask us for money. They said, come and see what we've done. And they said, haven't you got more shoots for us? We want to go to the neighbor. The neighbor is phoning us. He wants to pay us. I said, just keep on grafting like you are. And that's the truth. That's what they were doing, these people. And if you go there now and say to them, look, here's more shoots. Do you want to graft? They were out on their own, and they would just simply graft the neighbors. And the neighbors learn, and they graft the next neighbors as well. And something that I haven't mentioned, which I think is necessary to mention now, is that, can you put one of those trees on the screen, please, that's actually producing fruit? I want to explain something to you.
Treating us as if it's the last time you see us. Maybe that's how you were treated in elsewhere. But this community belongs to you, so you can give us your bioscope. We can give us paperwork. We can follow up. We don't have to kill the VT time by going through this bioscope all the time. You can illustrate by talking to us.
One little opportunity, please. If you see the tree that's actually grown up, the one I'm looking at on the screen, you will notice that the bigger the tree gets, the more shoots it actually produces. Each one of those shoots, you can cut off the tree and you can sell it to the next door neighbor. So you've got a twofold attack on this whole project. For the first 5 years, the neighbors will all buy the graft wood. What we want to do is start a nursery as well, a commercial nursery, and assist the people. If the tree costs 10 rand to produce, we charge the people 10 rand, just the cost. There must be no profit making out of it. It must be something that's funded, and an ordinary tree is given to the people that's grown from a seedling, and they then graft themselves with that graftwood. So they've got two ways of making money for themselves, selling the graftwood and eventually from the fruit. And more graftwood is produced, so each year there's another income. It's just something extra that I wanted to say. Let me go on to question number 2. What did we do in Polokwane? We made a presentation very similar to this one, where we explained to a huge delegation, and they were very impressed, and they gave it their blessing. It's brand new what we've done. It was done just before Christmas, and we are waiting their response at the moment. And our intention, of course, is to try and spread the word so that we go nationally, because the other question that was asked is, why nationally? Where do these trees grow? Avocado trees grow in the eastern districts of the country, where there's good rainfall, where there's good soil, and there are less avocados growing wild than mangoes. Mangoes grow everywhere. Mangoes grow in hot climates, they grow near our town, they grow right down to the game reserve. In fact, mangoes are plastered all over the country. Mangoes are so important. There's such a demand for ripe mangoes in the form of juice, in the form of dried fruit. It's unbelievable. The orders are so big that I don't think anybody in South Africa can even fulfill those orders. And these two trees, these two species of trees are everywhere. I mean millions of them, growing wild. One just needs to drive into the area and have a look. How many factories will be built? Well, a certain factory has a certain capacity, so we would go for a factory which I have made studies on and which I'm familiar with. A factory would be able to do a decent, smallish, medium factory would do about 5,000 tons of juice per annum. And I would think right up in the north where we are down to Zanin area, we would require at least three factories to handle the volume of fruit that will come out of this production. Oil factories, at least two oil factories. And if you go down further and you go down to White River and Zanin, at least Nell's Break, well, the Bushbuck Ridge is so big, I think all of you know, there's so many people over there that I don't know the numbers there, I haven't done a study on it, but certainly several factories could go up in that area on both avocados and mangoes. To visit the project, well, of course, we'd welcome anybody to come over there and have a look. So I think seeing is believing. Those that want to come, please do. The department's involvement, well, we've asked them to get involved. It's early days. We've told them what we've told you, and we believe that they are going to come to the party. And yes, we've had good discussions with them. What areas are suitable? I think I've answered that. It's all the subtropical regions which are suitable for these kinds of trees. And the subtropical regions in South Africa stretch far and wide. It's, if you look at the areas just outside of, let's take Sabasa on the mountains, I went and visited some of the traditional leaders. We made an appointment through our contacts, and I spent the whole morning there. And you know what they said to me was, you know, this is such a nice project. It's so easy. We plant maize every year, and we get sometimes one bag of maize over a hectare. Sometimes we get nothing. And then we've got to plant again next year. When are you coming? You know, when are you coming to do this? Tell us, and we'll call everybody. We'll call everybody to come and listen to what you've got to say. And we'll join. That's what I hear wherever I go. No one says that why, but this, that. They just say, let's get involved. Let's get the things going. There's land. There's a huge amount of land on the mountains at Hakaku. That's a place some 35, 40 kilometers from Duitrikot. I went up there. I looked at the altitude. The altitude was so favorable that you can actually produce fruit there that's out of season. In November and December and early January, just because of the climatic conditions, the temperature, the fruit hangs longer. And what happens? The price is five times what you'd get normally on the market, simply because it's out of season. And out of season is just the place where you plant it. Yes, also one of the observations. Thank you for that. I think I've covered those questions. There was another question, marula trees, which was addressed. I think I need to make another opportunity to come and address you on that. I know quite a lot about marula trees, and I know about making juice out of marulas, but that's a topic on its own. If you look at behind the Soutpansberg, and you look at what's the place called where they're building the Madupi power station, what's it called? Ellis Ross. If you look at that part of the world, there are more marula trees there than in the whole of South Africa, in that area. There thousands of tons of fruit can come in there. You can build a factory on its own. It's another subject. Thank you.
Much. We would pursue this discussion both with the relevant and Province Health Department and our National Department, then we'll make a follow-up and talk to you. Our responsibility is not to give you money because we don't do that. We just work with the provincial and national departments that have the budget to do so. Thank you very much. Now, Umviti, you can sit down and listen if you have more time available to yourself.
Honorable Chairperson, if you would please excuse us, we've got a plane to catch back to Limpopo at about 3 o'clock.
Umviti? In a movie.
Honourable Chairperson, members of the committee, and ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take this opportunity and firstly express my gratitude for the opportunity we've been given by the committee to come and present today. My name is Mthobi Simkhize. I'm the Chief Executive of Umbiti Development Consultants and also the Chairperson of the Rural Development Foundation. I hope Uma Mukala will make her jump to hear that I'm from KwaZulu-Natal. So we are from Pietermaritzburg in KwaZulu-Natal, and that's where we currently based. I also like to appreciate the presentation that has been done by my colleagues, and it's such an eye-opening presentation, and they are enlightening in terms of what we do in collaboratively. Without any waste of time, I'm just going to take you through Umviti Development Consultant as to what we do, what programs are we engaged at on both the local, the district, and the provincial level. And then I will touch base on our response as far as the amendment of the bill is concerned. Umviti Development Consultant is a development consultancy And it's one of the initiatives that have been given birth by our mother project, which is the Rural Youth Development SA. And under Rural Youth Development SA, we've got other programs like the Adam College Academy of the Arts and Tourism. I'm glad that earlier on, Honorable Chairperson, he did mention that on his remarks that the rural development is not only about rural development, but basically it's about all other departments as well. And I highly appreciate that because this is basically means or basically say a lot about what you're doing as MVG Development Consultant, as we do engage on other programs outside the agriculture. The Adam Joseph Academy of the Arts and Tourism is a youth development academy. We're currently working on it in Adams College in Durban. It is a yes. I can see one cover there jumping like a baby. Now she's hearing about the areas that she is well familiar with. We approached the Adams College SGB, which is the school governing body, to actually inquire about the old buildings that are there at the school. Then we approached the provincial office of the premier to actually see if we can get some kind of assistance as far as renovating the buildings is concerned. And one of our programs, the Inkosila Dumakulu project, the Inkosila Dumakulu Cultural Village and Conference Center. It's a cultural village. Basically, we've been offered a 3-hectare land by the Inkosia Wabumuza. They gave the Mbumuza Traditional Authorities, they gave us a 3-hectare land to actually do something as far as youth development is concerned. This is a brief structure or the plan on what is about to take place there. Basically, the project is kickstarting in March, and hopefully by September next year should be accomplished. This project is aimed at employing quite a number of young people in the area of Mbumuza and surrounding areas in Pietermaritzburg. Another project is a Invent the World of Tourism, where we went to Imbende. It's one of the local municipalities, and we did a feasibility study there as far as converting Imbende into a tourist destination and looking at all the possibilities that we could utilize for tourism purposes. Although I'm not going to brief on this project because it's not what I'm here about. This is one of the Imbende Mountains, whereby we saw it as a very good attraction for tourism in the area, and in the project that could also benefit young people and ordinary members of the society of the local municipality. The KwaZulu-Natal International Art Festival is an event of art, performing arts, visual arts, and culture, whereby we're hoping at collaborating with other provinces as well. And yes, although it's a once-off event, it happens only once a year, but we're hopefully looking at seeing it creating a lot of opportunities as far as youth development is concerned. And the South African Youth on the Move is a business apprentice and seminars and workshops whereby we actually empowering young people, especially those from the rural and disadvantaged communities, and looking at how we can assist them to actually develop the understanding of operating, running their own businesses in their own rural setups. And there was the Natal Young Achievers Award 2011. This is actually a national project because the KwaZulu-Natal Young Achievers Award is a pilot project of the South African Young Achievers Awards. Basically, we're looking at how we can recognize young people in their, especially rural and disadvantaged setups, who are actually taking initiatives at developing other young people in the area and actually taking initiatives at developing their areas. And we're looking at academics, arts, business, community development, environment, or agriculture, fashion and beauty, tourism, innovation, rural initiatives, science and technology, sports, and we've got the main award there for the Young Achiever of the Year. And at the meantime, we're looking at 11 districts and the 11 categories for the 2011 in KwaZulu-Natal, and hopefully we'll be going on the national pretty soon. And this is all being monitored or being coordinated by the Rural Youth Development Foundation SA, which is an overall program. So I'm very much sorry about the sound. I didn't know this was coming up because it wasn't coming up on my laptop. OMBG Development Consulting, a brief introduction. It's a youth development consultancy and it's an organization of priority in youth development, education, mentoring and growth in business. The organization, which has shown a great amount of effort from its stakeholders, executive members, it's directed to the public of all levels in South African societies. As OMBG, we've established a long history of offering support to community projects through our vision and our program to better the lives of young people. So basically, this is our introduction, just a brief introduction as to what we do and what we engage as. Although I am going to go next to our vision, which is to target young people from the rural and disadvantaged South African communities, and we assist them to combine the understanding of talent, education, career, and social living within the community. Someone who maybe is not familiar with the name, which is maybe they're going to ask him or herself as to what does it stand for. MVT is a Zulu name for a tree. In English, it is translated as a shepherd's tree, and it grows in the rocky, dry, and deserted areas. Basically, this aligns a lot with our vision and our mission to actually go there in the rural communities and establish those young talents and actually assist those young people to actually get involved in developing themselves and developing others at the same time. And the tree on its own, it gives shelter to the shepherds during sunny or stormy day. I think that just describes us. We are a kind of an organization where when we get to the rural community, we basically want to give shelter. I mean, if you give someone a shelter, you show love, you show care, and usually say the shelter is not something permanent. It's something that it's just for a very short space of time, and after that, a person must be able to stand on his or her own and actually does something that's going to benefit them in the long run. And this is a very literal tree, and it's very good for nature. I've got other meanings of the tree, and I think the most interesting one is Miss Stain is going to assist me on this one, because at the same time it's a bit disturbing. when I saw it, it was a bit disturbing, but I hope that herself and unfortunately Minia Rian is gone. So we're going to be assist as to where does it come from to actually name this tree as a red hat. But that's the only description that I didn't find quite comfortable. But we've got other translations, not in Sotho, it's Bokutsi, and in Tswana it's Motopi. In Venla it's Motopi. Let me not go into details as to what the tree stands for, but basically, yes, it's an evergreen tree. And it aligns a lot with our vision as to be a helpful organization in the situations that young people come across in the rural communities. Our goals is to promote a vibrant and inclusive youth cultural environment in South Africa, mostly in rural and disadvantaged communities. And we want to be an organization that cultivates the creativity amongst young people, because we believe that when young people are creative, there is a lot that they can do amongst themselves to actually develop them from zero to hero. This is our staff complementary. We've got executive officers, the directors, the project managers, the researchers, administrators, down to project and event coordinators. Our development initiatives, they are based on BASED. BASED was a name that we came up with when we put together our initiatives. It simply stands for, B stands for beauty and fashion, which is one of the portfolios that we're doing to assist these young people or to develop these young people. A stands for arts, which is both performing and visual arts. F stands for sport. T for tourism. E stands for educational and skills. And after our International Rural Youth Development Summit that was held in Pietermaritzburg last year, we managed to come up with two newly initiated portfolios, which is the agriculture and business development. OMBG combined the concept of BASED, which is BASED and the AIDS, the talent, the career guidance, to enable those young people from the rural and disadvantaged communities to gain access in the world of beauty, fashion, arts, sports, tourism, education, and skills, agriculture, and business development, and relate this, relate all of this to career opportunities. So basically, when we go there to these communities, we take all of this and actually relate it to what young people out there can convert their talent, whereby they can convert whatever they're good at, to actually convert it into a career. And to actually make this something that's going to be beneficial to them in a long run. We've got partners in Peter Maritzburg area, Mgungundlovu district, and throughout KwaZulu-Natal. Let me take you through to some of our programs that we conducted last year. Last year, we actually took young people from the rural communities and exposed them to the hot initiative of the FIFA World Cup program. Basically, when we looked at this, we saw it actually assisting them to get on the platform of becoming people that can be recognized during the World Cup event. So as to today, we've got a road in Peter Maritzburg that closed down to conduct the Mgungundlovu youth carnival. It's an annual event that takes place in Peter Maritzburg now, and all these young people from the rural communities who were not recognized previously, they now get a platform to come and perform. And we had the young people coming from different walks of life and different areas in KwaZulu-Natal to perform in this festival. And we have our conferences on an annual basis, where we get the young people together to actually discuss the issues that is surrounding their development, and especially those who are coming from the rural communities, to also express their feelings. We also engaged in a district level of the Mgungundlovu, whereby we get invited on numerous events to actually present our findings and studies. Here we were involved in a social cohesion conference that took place in 2009. We took a picture here with the Minister of Arts and Culture for KwaZulu-Natal, where we were presenting a research paper. And we were also part of the Bawule Southern African Summit, which was held in Johannesburg in 2008. And here we had a picture with the Minister of Tourism from Lesotho. We also took part in the Sports and Recreation Conference that took place in Peter Maritzburg last year, and this was a national event where we also presented our findings as far as that the sport development is concerned. We also have our own initiative that we established. I can mention here the International Rural Youth Development Summit, which took place for the first time last year in Peter Maritzburg, and our team that was working towards sustainable rural youth development. And last year, we engaged the presenters and guest speakers on a local sphere. But this year, we are going as far as getting our speakers and presenters from the SADC communities. So as we have started traveling the SADC countries, trying to engage with the organization from the SADC countries to actually see what are they doing as far as the youth development in the rural areas is concerned. Talking about what I'm here about today, which is the Rural Development and Reform, the General Amendment Bill. Excuse me. This submission presents an overview of the situation and amendment of various laws under the administration of the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. This has been focused on rural youth laws in terms of their economic development and the main issues that previously challenged them, and thus the development of rural communities prior and post to the proposed change. So basically, this is our response to a call that was made by the committee to actually look at the amendments that the bill is actually carrying, to see what is it that it could entail to the ordinary members of the society. The bill on its own is a very interesting, informative document, because we managed to actually take our time to actually look at it and look at the amendments and see how those amendments affect the ordinary members of the society, especially those in a rural in a rural setup. So we looked at them as to how they were proposed, and we look at the duties of the minister from the delegation of the power and functions to day-to-day running of the portfolio. So basically here, what we find interesting here is the way it's been planned or it's been organized to look at the duties of the minister delegating the power from him or herself to the director general, to the deputy director general, down to the ordinary employee who is maybe an administrator, and we're looking at that as to how it affects an ordinary member in a rural development society or in a community whereby these people don't get an opportunity to actually access such documentation. So what I found very much interesting on this proposal was the interrelationship or the connection within the department head, the departmental heads and the officials to junior members of the staff. If you look at this interrelationship, it sounds very interesting as in terms of the delegation of the power, as to if this really takes place on a uniform kind of a manner. I think this kind of a document, it could be easier for this kind of information to be accessed by ordinary members of the society, especially those who don't get such opportunities to access these types of documents. But although my contribution is more focusing at the name change and its contribution to the development and support towards the bill. So if you look at the bill on its own as an interesting document, and carrying these duties by the ministry, these duties by the employees of the government. It's a very interesting document, but then I'm just going to take a step back to look at the developing of the bill. The document on its own, it serves as a very good sign of sustainable and balanced growth, because if you look at the simplicity of the matter, if you look at the fact that someone has to sit down and think about amending the document, and then think about making changes, it means that somebody actually took initiative to actually think about the way this kind of a document is operating in a society. And I'm looking at the operation of the high powers, or maybe the powers of the minister to the powers of the DG, all those powers being shared within the ministry or the department on its own. You see that the sharing of this kind of power is becoming so interesting that everyone actually gets involved in their own special way, and that it tends the document to be no longer a document or a piece of a document that could be filed away in an office, but it's taking a step of becoming an action. This is, for me, when I look at the document and I'm looking at the developing of the bill, it's becoming an action. It's no longer a document that could be filed away, but now it's becoming more of an action that could get the whole society of South Africa involved in this whole process of developing. And I'm looking at the information sharing to the ordinary members of the society, because if you look at the way this kind of power is being shared amongst the ministry, I mean within the department, you look at the way it can get so easily accessed by the ordinary members of the society. And this is where I find it so much interesting, that the information could be shared amongst the community so easily. And us as the specialists in rural development, we look at this as one of the platforms to actually portray the government vision of a country full of opportunities and the balance in economic growth. Why I'm saying this? I'm saying this because the people who actually get to access the document nowadays are young people, and those are the people that I very much work close with. And if we deal about a document being accessed by such people, we're talking of growth, we're talking of business being established, we're talking of how this document could play a role in terms of developing the growth of the country and developing young people in our community. So this is where it gets so much interesting. Because when we talk of the economy of the country, we're talking of young people. These people who are actually employed in the departments, the government departments, in the big corporate businesses, and these are the kind of people that can actually get the country growing. So when we look at this document as an organization, we look at it as a public policy for rural youth. Why we're looking at it as a public policy, we see this document as something which could formalize some kinds of plans Because when you look at the policy is a piece of information that comes with plans, with strategies, with the rules, the guiding principle and causes of action. Because that's basically the main part of developing other people, of developing the country, the rules, the interactions, and the guiding principles and the procedures. So we look at this as a strategic planner or the strategic actor in rural youth development, because the more young people get to access such information, they'll be able to convert their knowledge, they'll be able to convert their creativity in terms of how can we as a department get to establish the vision of the country within the communities that we live in. So we also look at this as a revised and the document that kind of analyzes the attention focused at rural development. Because when you look at the transition within the name change from land affairs to rural development, it actually analyzes the kind of development that takes place in between. The document also says that the strategic development initiative that utilizes the advantage of a good link and partnership between the government and the ordinary members of the society. So when you look at this, you look at this document, we as an organization, we look at this document as a kind of a document that describes the government's vision about people who are living in the rural setup, the communities that actually form the structures in the rural setup. Looking at the transition state between the name rural development, actually comparing the name rural development to land affairs, because that is what I find very much interesting when I was going through the bill on its own. I find it very much interesting in terms of provoking the researchers, the writers and critics, even the ordinary individuals, to actually focus at how they can play a vital role in making a difference in rural communities or in the rural areas. So if you look at this, you look at the initiative that kept the whole nation talking. It's actually we're looking at the document that actually kept the whole country talking as to how can we get involved in this whole transition from land affairs to actually rural development. For instance, in between this transition, a lot of programs were established. Besides looking at researchers getting interested in looking at how they can get they can take part in a whole development, you find the whole nation getting involved. I decided to put this slide of an advertisement that was actually put through by the Department of Rural Development by the committee. Sorry about that. This was actually a step forward for the committee to actually get the whole nation involved in this whole transition. If you look at what was very much interesting here was what is written in bold, have your say. That on its own, it plays a vital role into getting the whole nation involved in this whole amending of the bill, in this whole changing towards a direction that could assist the developing of the rural communities. So if you look at this, you're looking at it as a marketing strategy to say, come on, South Africa, let's all get involved. So we're looking at the department or at the process of moving from the land affairs to rural development. That on its own is playing a vital role into getting the whole nation talking. So besides that, when you're looking at the stage, you're looking at the results. The results actually that came up after as someone who works very much close with the rural communities, you're looking at many rural development programs that got established simply by the transition from land affairs to rural development. Because when you talk of the land affairs, on its own had a very limited meaning to a lot of individuals. Why am I saying this? Because if you're looking at the economic development and opportunities, the change from land affairs to rural development has a very big potential in terms of maximizing funding opportunities for rural-based organizations. The reason I'm saying this is based on experience and on the study that we conducted, you find that a lot of CBOs and NPOs in the rural setups, immediately when they change their profile to a rural development organization, that actually maximizes the opportunities for them to actually secure some kind of funding, both locally and internationally. I mean, this is the kind of a study that we conducted, that it wasn't only about looking at these organizations and seeing the organizations, because I mean, nowadays you find that a lot of organizations, they get established simply for their own benefits. But when the government, maybe let me just finish up with this slide, because anyway, whatever I'm going to say is going to reflect on my next slide. The change between land affairs and rural development is also brought a very big potential in terms of a brand, branding the rural communities. Previously, the rural communities were being coordinated under the land affairs. And if you look at it now, the rural communities are being branded in a way, in a very potential way that helps them to actually attract donors for sponsorship, for potential sponsorships, and improving market and promotional strategies for themselves as well. We look at minimizing risk of exploitation for rural businesses. So if you're looking at a change, you look at the way businesses were being exploited previously under the land affairs concept, and you look at how they're being recognized simply because now they are being recognized as organizations or projects that actually are meant for rural development. We're also looking at how the whole change classifies the unfortunate as also part of our country's growth. Because if you look at this, the rural development, this is the kind of a study that we conducted when we look at the rural development and GDP. The change from land affairs to rural development has a drastic improvement in terms of improving people's lives. Because I'm reflecting this to a proclamation that was made by the Honorable President, which was the proclamation number 44 of 1 July 2009, where he transferred the administration powers and functions to a specified legislation to the Minister for Rural Development. What does this mean to ordinary citizens of the country? For me, this, or for us as an organization, this meant recognition. It meant that the rural communities are now, they're being recognized. They are now being part of the country's growth, both economically and other means. The sense of ownership. We're looking at the rural communities now having this kind of pride that they're now being recognized on the national level. We're looking at it. I mean, we're looking at the proclamation meaning happiness to ordinary members of the society. Because as an ordinary member of the society living in the deep rural areas of KwaZulu-Natal, immediately when the Honorable President himself mentions that the rural communities are being part of his planning of developing the country, that automatically makes me happy. So we're looking at this. Also bringing growth amongst the rural communities. Because, I mean, if you look at what is going on in the rural communities now, you find that a very big amount of development is taking place in terms of growing other people. I mean, Umzinzi Development Consultant, the Rural Youth Development Foundation was part of that kind of growth. Because we're looking at the growth that is currently taking place. And what this means to ordinary members is that although it might entitles the four points that I've mentioned, but at the same time, there's also a disadvantage part of it, because as rural communities, this kind of a documentation that we're talking about today is not being shared in a way that will make the rural citizens benefit from this whole setup or from the system. Because today, we're finding, if you go to the rural areas, you find that the researchers or the explorers who are coming as far as the UK, the US, they are in the youth in the rural communities today conducting researches that later on those researches are going to be converted into producing or publishing books or publishing journals or catalogs that are at the same time going to sell back to us in the near future. So what is it that we're doing as a rural people, or as rural, let me say, department to actually make sure that the benefits of the conversion, the benefit of the changing from land affairs to rural development is very much benefit the people, the ordinary societies of the society. I mean, in a very simple manner, I'm looking at the publishing of the journals, that this proclamation by the government, it should benefit these people from the rural development, to say that, come on, start collecting information that we will later publish as books, and in the near future, then those books will sell back to our South African communities. I'm just going to quote which I've cited from the presentation by the Honorable MEC Inyakone, MEC for, the MEC for finance, sorry. in her presentation last year, she looked at a research that was conducted by the NEF. She said, in 2006, the Happy Planet Index of Human Well-Being and Environmental Impact was introduced by the New Economic Foundation. It challenges the well-established index of countries. Development such as gross domestic product, which is the GDP, and the Human Development Index, which is the HDI, which is regarded as too limiting and not taking sustainability into account. Using life expectancy, life satisfaction, and the ecological footprint of countries, the Happy Planet Index tries to measure quality of life or social progress in more holistic and psychological terms than gross national product or GDP. This research and discussions on activities and policies actually contributing to a happier society, featuring strongly at the 15th International Gross National Happiness Conference held in Brazil. The happiest people in the world in 2009 seem to be the Costa Ricans. The Costa Rica scored the highest 76.1 out of 100 on the Happy Planet Index. Not only do Costa Ricans have the highest life satisfaction in the world, but they also have the second highest average life expectancy of the new world, which is the next is the Canadian. The highest placed Western nation is the Netherlands, which is number 43 out of 143. The UK still ranks midway down the table, number 74 behind Germany, Italy, and France. Behind Germany, Italy, and France. The USA comes a long way back in 114th place, while China was ranked number 20. It has dropped from its previous position despite the many benefits of the move to a market economy. It shines in the 12th position, while sub-Saharan countries make up the bottom of the list, except for South Africa, which I find very much interesting. We moved up from number 156 in 2006 to number 118 position in 2009. What does this say to me as an ordinary member of the society? Moving from position number 156 to 118, when we started this kind of research, we said it means that the proclamation by the Honorable President in 2009 made a very big impact even in our own ordinary societies. How are we actually studying this? We're studying this in a way that if you look at when this was proclaimed, let me start by saying that South Africa is one of the countries where the rural communities, the high percentage of rural communities is actually extreme. And when you look at the proclamation that was done by the President in 2009, it actually got the South African people happy. Which caused that kind of that drastic move from position number 156 to position number 118. What does this say to this? What does this say to us today? It says that the proclamation by the president meant that when he did this proclamation, it meant that the people or the huge percentage of South African society got happy and had happier lives. Where does this get me? It gets me to the fact that the study informs us that the President's proclamation made an impact in the lives of ordinary South African citizens, which might have not been recognized, but made a huge difference that it was even picked up by the World Study. Although the research team caught up with us, but no one would have imagined the result should the recession stroke during the time when we were down, bitter, and unhappy. So if you look at the fact that the proclamation was done in 2009 and we became heavy, then immediately after that, then the recession struck. It struck during the time whereby the people were actually happy by the fact that the land affairs people, if I may call them, the honorable guest can allow me to call them that, the people who were from the rural communities, immediately when they were being given a title, said that you are a rural, you fall under the portfolio of rural development. It got them happy. It got them involved. It actually got them going. So if you look at this, which made a very huge impact in South African rural communities. So now we're looking at this, which made me put this little quote here to say that the difference between a person who gets injured during the celebration and the one who gets injured while mourning is the context of pain. So the recession caught up with us in 2009, but when you look at it, we actually the recession caught up with us, but we were happy people. We were from the rural communities and we were happy, and it wasn't that bad. So just briefly, if you can jump to the next slide, talking about the bill and the GDP. I use the KZN as a case study here. The capital indicators for KZN indicate that an increase in the average standard of living and an increase in the labor returns in province since 2000 is like this. When you look at the year 2000, between the year 2000 and 2009, we see an increase there. That in the year 2000, the KZN GDP at all ages was about 17 million. And then when you look at it in 2009, during the recession, it was about 19 million. Jumping to the next slide, it talks about the provincial GDP as increasing at an average of 3.2%. Which is in real terms since 2000, where the provincial budget increased at 5.14. Let's look at this in a graph format. The budget in the year 2000 dropped by minus 10%, where we can find it in the year 2002, but then came up in 2003 to about 10%. And then from there onwards, it's growing, and it was on a very promising move as to compared to the KZN GDP. Although the budget was like this, has a very uneven move taking place. But looking at the GDP, it says something about people, because the GDP is about the community, it's about people, it's about ordinary members of the society. So if the GDP was as stable as that, it means that the people were actually contributing towards the country. It means that the people were involved in the country. They were part and parcel of the country. Even when the proclamation was made in 2009, when the recession caught up with us, still, you look at the GDP being just below the average and then suddenly coming up again. If you just see the next slide, we see the table there of a study that was conducted at Umdikodlovu District Municipality. Here, we're looking at the GDP between the year 2000 and 2008. The GDP for the Umdikodlovu District Municipality here was estimated at about 181 million. And there was significant growth of about 83.3% in 2002 to about 210 million. In 2008. So we are looking at the initial growth there in the whole entire district. Here, Umsunduzi District, which is the local municipality, was the largest contributor of the GDP, of the municipal GDP, which is an average of about 73.7%, followed by Ngeni, which is at about 8.3%. The least contributor was Impende, the local municipality, which was sitting at about 1.7%. While I'm mentioning this, it's getting us to the next slide. When we look at the next slide, looking at all the sectors there, we've got agriculture, mining, manufacturing, etc. Impende, the local municipality, was the best contributor, was the best local municipality to contribute as far as the agriculture is concerned. What does it say to us as citizens? It means that as a contributor to Impende as a 62.5 contributor on agriculture, and looking at what has been done at Impende to develop agriculture,
I'm looking at the fact that it means that there is a potential growth as far as the agriculture is concerned. Because if you look at the fact that Impede is contributing 62.5%, while on an overall contribution of the GDP is still sitting at 1.66%, it means that agriculture-wise, or let me say, it means that agriculture is the best contributor towards the countries, or because our study was based on the province, on the district, as far as the district GDP is concerned. So it means that, yes, we are on the right track by getting people involved in the rural areas and actually enhance the development of agriculture and also looking at how we can take this to 100% in the near future. So if you look at the fact that the sector that contributed substantially to the GDP in the municipality of Mgungundlovu district was agriculture, except for Msunduzi, you see that, yes, there is the potential in growing the agriculture in the rural areas. So going forward, the sector shares of the municipality in GDP in 2008 tell us that the economy of our district depends on agriculture. In overall, you look at this and see that, okay, this depends on the overall contribution. So if Impede is the lowest contributor of the district GDP, it means that while it's the highest in agriculture, and the agriculture is the highest in the overall sector, a lot still needs to be done to improve agribusiness in the district. So that's where we look at the document or at the bill playing part in actually getting it being accessible by the ordinary members, so that once they access this kind of information, then how can we as an organization get them motivated in terms of taking this forward? The improvement of agribusiness is based on sustainable rural development. So if we develop, the rural areas, that means that we develop the rural communities. Out of government, okay, let me just jump this, and then we're looking at the Chinese say, we say that when the winds of change blow, some people build shelters, others build windmills. The South African government chose to build windmills by not cutting down on the infrastructure spending. The change from land affairs to rural development was the result. It could have been viewed critically and differently since it was declared during the tough times when the recession took place. It could have been critically viewed by other people and other organizations, but still, it's worth it. The fact that the South African government decided to build windmills by changing from land affairs, because that is, that although it has nothing to do, I could see that there was no financial implication, of, because that's the first thing that we look at as ordinary citizens, say, okay, what does it cost the taxpayer to actually change from land affairs to rural development? The other is there was no financial implication. So this means that, yes, but the way, actually, there could have been other views. There could have been other things that we could look at, critical matters that could have been brought up by other organizations. But still, the South African government decided to take that route. The expenditure on infrastructure has been very useful in creating employment opportunities and improving the competitiveness of competitive advantage in the rural communities, thus minimizing the effect of the recession. As acknowledgement of this stimulating effect of infrastructure investment, KwaZulu-Natal, for its part, has increased infrastructure spending from 10.8 billion in 2009 to 11.5 billion in 2010-2011 budget, and 12.7 billion to 2011-2012 expenditure. Our Premier, the Honourable Dr. William Keyes, has spelled out the priorities in his State of the Province address, that therefore the forecast of the expenditure in the 2010-11 budget is, look at the first priority, rural development. If you look at the prioritization, the rural development is now on top of your priorities. It's not only on South African government, it's worldwide. Because of this proclamation by the government, said that now let's move away from the land affairs. Although the land affairs concept might have created problems even for the other countries that I cannot mention. But that on its own, moving from the concept of land affairs to rural development, it has actually elaborated on putting the rural development
on as a first priority in everything. Both governments cooperate. If you look at how the cooperatives are actually contributing, or if whenever the cooperative business want to improve their market share, in nowadays, you'll find that the CEO of a cooperative industry will just go to the rural community setup and just take a stroll there. You find that a CEO or a chairperson of a huge organization like AFSA will just take a stroll in the rural setup. And if you look at that, the media, the way the media responds to that, it actually contributes to improving the market share for that particular cooperative industry. So, which means that by looking at the fact that the rural.
If we were your workers now, we would have to get out into a doi doi. Okay, well, this is our lunch break time now, but we will not leave you unfinished if you were to rush through the last one now.
Okay. Okay. If you look at my final. Okay. Okay. Basically, when you look at the development between the land affairs and the rural development, you see that the development indicates a need actually for getting more young people involved, for getting a need of getting youth involved in the whole development from the rural, from land affairs to actually rural development. And this engagement in alternative is actually an alternative income generating activity, which has now become the buzzword in the rural areas since of the change. If you look at what is happening in the rural areas now, you see that young people want to get involved in developing themselves because of the change from land affairs. They want to now establish their own the companies, they want to establish their own organizations going forward. But due to further development of rural communities, including SMEs and local economic LED opportunities, young people now regard traditional practices like agriculture as a potential business. This is based on the conversion from land affairs to rural development. If you look at that slide, it shows us that the involvement of young people in the entire Mgungundlovu district is now 17.5, and on Umgeni on its own, just Umgeni local municipality is about 23.5 between 2001 and 2003. And then if you look at it now, 2007 and 2008, going forward, there is a drop, but that could look, we could look at that further in terms of how the recession plays a role. Looking at the rural development as a brand for young people, this more young people now have developed a moral of getting involved in developing themselves. But then, due to their limited, because previously you find that young people used actually to relocate from their own communities because they were regarded as the disadvantaged communities. But prior, post to the change from land affairs to rural development, now you find them that they have developed the interest to actually stay there, have their own businesses, have their own organization, or maybe take part in developing their own community. The development of rural communities is bringing hope to rural youth and highlighting them as problem solvers rather than problems to be solved. I'm not going to go through this whole reading here. I'm going to respect the remarks from the Honorable Chairperson. I'm just going to jump at looking at young people as considerable potential and as their considerable potential and willingness to actually help and develop their communities. I believe that the community should look at this as an overall initiative to actually how they can get young people involved in their own community setup, in their own communities, and how they can be involved in developing their own communities. Because youth have power to change their communities. Young people have power to actually bring about change. If we can start talking about this, we could actually talk until the next day. But if looking at my conclusion, that in brief, the rural development bill, we're looking at it as a development strategy to benefit rural economy. And we're looking at it as reflecting the findings of study, looking at rural youth and that rural communities, and whereby they are missing out on development opportunities more readily available to urban youth, and what can be done to turn the situation around. And one of our goals is to improving success to basic needs and to actually vocational training as in like a critical matter as far as the rural youth development is concerned. So Umfiti Youth Development Consultant and the Rural Youth Development Foundation SA in collaboration have activities to address this information gap between the individual, the local individuals and the government. And from time to time, we have complementary activities that are implemented to address the needs established within the rural communities. And actually, just want to quickly round up by saying our pride will always be the result of responsible community engagement, excellence in teaching and learning, and our partnership for consultation and progress and ongoing evaluation. And in closing, I would like to extend an invitation to the Honorable Chairperson and his Honorable Members. I would like to extend this invitation for the International Rural Youth Development Summit 2011, which is taking place on the 22nd to the 20th to the 22nd of July. I think there is this slide is playing tricks on me. It's basically 20th to the 22nd of July 2011, and it's taking place at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Pietermaritzburg. And our theme is working towards a sustainable rural youth development. Thank you.
Ngosi, Abulela, Chief, your written submission was taken for granted, but then after deliberation by the committee, they decided to invite you to come and do the verbal, because public hearing, you choose between making a written submission or an oral. In your case, you have done both. You've given us a written and also a verbal. We'll appreciate if you gave us the soft copy, because your pictures won't be good for the hard copy. And then we, as a committee, I have indicated that our responsibility would be to share with our fellow committees here in Parliament, so that they can help you through their own departments. For instance, you have listed issues that are relevant to NYDA. You have listed issues that are in responsibility of Arts and Culture Department, Tourism Department, Sports Department, Agriculture and Rural Development, and even the call by President Zuma for the infrastructure to be created in rural areas, in the form of houses, malls, bringing electricity and water and roads, plus health and education facilities to rural communities. So, like I said, rural development is everything about these things and more. What we would do is to encourage you to continue to knock at the doors of these various departments, whilst we continue to knock at the doors of our fellow colleagues here in Parliament, so that not only should the young people in KZN benefit from rural development, but also throughout the country. And your province is the first one to establish One Village, One Product campaign. We would encourage you, so that the two presenters that were here before you, fortunately, you said through that. Could you pick up some things about creating the actual finished product in the rural area, so that the beneficiation that you will do can benefit the local economic development process in your town? And I like the studies you have done. It shows that you are serious about development. I think it's to translate your theory into practice, and President Zuma is instructing us to stop theorizing now and create jobs. And I think for purposes of what you have done today, it will help you to translate all these brilliant ideas that you have into actual products in the villages, so that young people should not dream of going to New York or dream of going to Hollywood, but rather dream of creating products where you are. And the old man, the last presenter here, was saying mangoes grow in KZN as well. as I know that they grow in Potajon, Bizana, and the Sigisi, both up in the east towards the Kruger National Park. So you can create the same product in that area. Umamkizigeaba, she's impressed by what you've done. Because then, now I better have my own and I am going to present us the sense of. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I know that some of you were panicking. Why are you allowing this young man to torture us this long whilst we should be out for lunch and have a break? I did so because you traveled such a long distance coming here. You spent so many hours listening to other people. It is our responsibility to listen to you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we will use your material in our debate in Parliament. Unfortunately, we don't know when Parliament is going to be debating this report and this bill. If we knew, we would invite you to come and listen to Mamo Baba and others who are going to talk about Limpopo, talking about KZN, and how you young people have created a base for us to say rural development is not just a changing in the name. Officials, I hope they take this in seriously. It's not a change in the name from land affairs to rural development, but it translates to the hope and the happiness. Your figures should be revised, though, Chief, because you said the UK is number, I don't remember the number, number 17. I think you said the UK is number...
The UK is the number, if I'm not mistaken...
You said it's number something out of 143. It's some number out of 143. And yes. Then, and when you were dealing with South Africa, you said South Africa is now 118 from 156.
Yes.
Now, if you say out of 143, then you are suggesting that the total number of countries that are studied is 143.
Okay.
But then you are saying South Africa has moved from 156 to 118, which means there are more than 143.
Okay, let me clarify that, Honorable Chairperson. The 143 actually describes the number of countries in the European countries.
Even that is not a good explanation because the countries in Europe are not 143. They are not.
Okay, I think
check the number of countries in the United Nations.
Yes.
180 something. So go back to your figures and check because see, I know that you were quoting your MEC.
Yes.
Check the study that he was quoting from and see what how many countries were studying. Because we can't come from 156 to 118 and then the UK from 143 to 43. Jumping 100 spaces. There must be something wrong there. Don't argue with me now, young man. It was the closing remarks. And I'm saying perhaps it will help a great deal. Even us, when we vote you from your own material, to go back to the study so that study is helpful to us in terms of how rural development can create a better life in the rural areas, taking into consideration the material that's available as potential. But I'll urge the officials to look at the studies you have quoted so that they can influence the programs that will come from rural development. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I know that we should have given you some time to ask questions for clarity, but it is this time. It's the middle of our lunch break. So I will skip the questions because the material is going to be given to us via the secretary. So if you have any questions after reading the presentation, perhaps what we could do is to communicate with them via email or via letters or telephone, whatever the case may be. Thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Mama Helen, womkhulu kunathi. Siyavala ngoku. Awunanto. I know that the report we should have received it. See, I approve the Vunuku faculty when we gave everybody the copy of that report. You went back home to read it. What do you think? What are you saying about it?
Chairperson, you're putting me in a corner. Because the young lions have spoken, and as an elderly, I was supposed to just clap hands. But, Chairperson, I think we have some few items on the agenda, and it's lunchtime. And my proposal would have been to adopt the minutes. I've gone through the study to report, and but I wouldn't like us to rush through it, adopting it. I don't know what other members are feeling, but just the minutes, adopt the minutes, and we know that we are done with the minutes, and then next week when we come back, then we deal with the report, and then we do justice to it. That will be my proposal, Chairperson.
Is everybody happy with that approach? You see, the benefit to those who were not there would be us looking at the three major items that are in that report. The Malawian land policy, although it's still draft, the youth development program that the minister asked us to go and look at, plus the community development strategy of both the village and the product. So, yes, staff have gone through painful process of making sure that report is complete, but if we debate it, it will benefit more people than just going through the motions. We do not want to go through the motions. Thank you very much. I put the minutes. Can we take them as read? Thank you. Any matters arising out of those minutes? We're taking all three of them, the ones of August and the other ones of November. And all three of them, the whole package. Yeah, because people have committed themselves to reading those minutes. So if you have a matter arising out of them, raise it now or forever keep your peace. Those who have read the minutes would have made notes about the issues they want to raise. And Ms. Mazibuko, it doesn't matter whether you were there at that time. Those issues that are nagging you could raise them. Switch off your mic, young man. All right, no matters arising. I put the minutes for adoption. Agreed? Thank you very much. I'm not going through the motions. I want to make sure that you have made a contribution in the document. When it is counted as our document by other people who read them, who did not sit in this committee meeting, we should be able to all of us collectively defend those minutes as our collective product. All right then, because the minutes now are adopted, there is no other business. Do you have another business? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, man. The meeting is adjourned. Until next week.